my feet. This isn't happening. This isn't happening. My breathing picks up. I'm going to hyperventilate. Maybe I'll pass out. Then I won't have to face them.
Ripley, don't you have anything to say for yourself?
How big is Boone Thrasher's dick? My readers want to know. Spill, girl. The voices are overwhelming, the questions coming from all directions as I stand there, frozen like an idiot deer about to be creamed by a Mack truck. How is this happening?
Ma'am, you need to get these people out of here.
I twist around to stare at the fire marshal again, but my ears are ringing from the questions being shouted. Did you consider it cheating or just following in your mom's footsteps? I keep my back turned, my shoulders hunched, needing to protect myself from the cameras any way I can. The fire marshal apparently doesn't care that this evening is tipping into nightmare territory. He has some sort of notebook out and is scribbling on the open page.
I'm citing you for overcapacity, and as soon as I can get back in the building, I'm going through your fire safety measures. If I find you're missing a single fire extinguisher, you're going to have some serious problems.
Reporters continue yelling at me, tossing out more demands to know about Boone and me and my mom, and I reach down and pinch my thigh to wake myself up. This can't be real. This is just a bad dream. The sting from my fingernails tells me it's not. My reality is actually this big of a disaster. The security guys from inside herd dozens of people out the front door, and the reporters pounce on the fresh meat.
Does anyone have pictures of Boone and Ripley Fisher together? We'll pay.
A guy wearing a Vandy shirt stumbles to a drunken halt in front of one reporter.
The bartender chick with the nice rack? I got a video of him dedicating a song to her. I'll sell it to you.
Oh, my God. I have to get out of here. I shove my way through the people streaming out the door, my gaze drawn to the stage where I last saw Boone. But it's empty. He's gone. And I'm left to clean up the mess. I'm always left to clean up the mess. 28. The last hour passed in a fog. When the fire marshal leaves, I shut the front door behind him with a decisive click and throw the lock. Leaning against the nearest table, I dig the heels of my hands into my eyes. More than anything, I want to sink to the floor, wrap my arms around my knees, and give in to the tears that have been threatening since the first awful question was thrown at me like a Molotov cocktail by those reporters. How could anyone think I had something to do with Boone and Amber breaking up? I didn't even know him then. Who would give them that kind of tip? It doesn't make any sense. I swallow back the lump in my throat and straighten. The stack of citations the fire marshal left sits on the bar like the pile of crap it is. In addition to overcapacity, he wrote up the fishbowl for outdated fire extinguishers, failure to test the sprinkler system regularly, and three other violations that sounded made up to me.
What a crazy night.
Carter picks up a toppled stool before reaching for another. The bar is a wreck. Two tables, three stools, and six chairs, all broken. There's shattered glass on the floor, along with puddles of spilled drinks, vomit, and what looks like blood from the fight. Cups cover the tables, some tipped over and leaking onto the floor. Dory, Carter, and I survey the mess with the same daunted look on our faces.
You guys can go. I'll deal with this.
They both look at me like I'm nuts. And maybe I am, but right now I don't think I can handle making small talk while we clean up this disaster.
Not a chance. I'll clear those tables and wipe them down. Carter will get the broken furniture out of here, and you can handle the mopping. Let's do this.
Dory sounds like a drill sergeant, and they both spring into action. I stare at the citations for another long moment, flipping through them and tallying the numbers in my head. I don't know how much we made tonight, but these fines are going to eat up most, if not all, of the cash. But first, I need to make sure Carter and Dory get paid. They rallied tonight with the kind of loyalty that's worth more than money. Another hour passes, and Dory and Carter have finished their tasks, leaving me with a hug from each and half the floor to mop.
Call me if you need me tomorrow. My daughter picks up the kids at 5, so I'm around after that, Dory says.
Carter offers his help if it's needed again, too, but I can't imagine it will be. Can I even open tomorrow with these citations? I wave to both of them, and the sick feeling that's been churning in my stomach intensifies as the question hangs over my head. It's the weekend, so it's not like I can pay the fines or call the city and ask questions. The only thing I can do is get this place back into shape and hope that some kind of solution occurs to me tomorrow before we're due to open. I dunk the mop back in the bucket and squeeze it dry as my brain turns to worst-case scenario solutions. If the fines take all the money we made tonight, maybe I can close another night a week and work somewhere else to help make ends meet for a while. I bet Hope would give me shifts Tuesday and Wednesday nights at the White Horse. Someone pounds on the locked back door, but I have absolutely no intention of opening it. I'm done with human interaction today. Done.
Ripley, it's me. Open up, sugar.
The deep voice is distinctive enough that there's no question who it is. Call it irrational if you want, but hearing Boone Thrasher's voice after I've spent the last couple of hours dealing with the mess he walked out on pisses me off enough to stomp to the door and yank it open.
What are you doing here?
He leans back on the heels of his trademark biker boots, with his hands jammed in his pockets, his eyes searching my face.
Can I come in?
He looks around like he's expecting paparazzi to jump out of the bushes and surprise him. Given what happened earlier, I step aside and let him in before shutting and locking the door again. When I turn around, I catch him scanning the bar before he turns back to me.
Everyone gone?
I nod, my anger and frustration threatening to boil over as his posture relaxes. I don't know what he's going to say, but I can't hold it in any longer.
What the hell happened tonight? You and Frisco decided you'd put on an impromptu concert and didn't bother to tell me first? I'm assuming you were trying to help, but we weren't prepared. I didn't have servers, enough people to help cover the bar, someone to work both doors so I could, I don't know, prevent the fire marshal from shutting me down.
I'm yelling by the time I get to the end of my tirade, and Boone's expression tightens and his shoulders stiffen.
You're really giving me shit for trying to do something nice? Any bar owner in this town would drop to their knees and beg us to come play. And yeah, we were here to help. You made a shitload of money tonight, which was the whole point. This place has one foot in the grave, and we thought if you could get some more traffic, maybe you'd have a shot at saving it.
By the time he's done, he looks just as pissed off as I probably do.
Yeah, well, you trying to help me save this place might have killed it even faster. Shit blew up in my face and you just disappeared.
I pause to deliver the worst part.
Not to mention now everyone thinks I'm your whore.
Boone takes a step back, his face morphing into a harsh scowl.
What the fuck are you talking about? Didn't you see the reporters out front before you bolted? Couldn't you hear them yelling at me?
His brows draw together in confusion.
No, we grabbed the equipment and went out the back.
I rub a hand over my face and tell him most of what they said. I leave out the part about my mom because I can't bring myself to repeat the words.
What in the ever-loving fuck?
Boone explodes, pacing across the freshly mopped section of the floor. He turns and pins his gaze on me.
Someone you know had to have tipped them off. This shit doesn't happen by accident. Who would have seen us here?
The air leaves my lungs like I've been sucker-punched.
You're blaming this on me?
My voice echoes off the high ceilings and my temper snaps.
Get out of my bar!
Boone stalks toward me instead of heading for the door. His black t-shirt stretches over his broad chest and thick arms, and the heat of anger in his gaze has me backing up until my ass bumps the brick wall. Boone keeps coming.
Get out. Not a fucking chance. I went out of my way to do something nice. Twice, for you. Not letting you get assaulted in a bar and then coming here tonight, and you're trying to throw me out on my ass? Not happening.
His arrogance tips my temper from pissed off to enraged.
What? You want some kind of thank you? It would be nice.
His words come out a low growl. I clench my jaw.
Thank you. Oh, so wonderful, Boone Thrasher, for lowering yourself to try to help me. Please spare me from any more of your favors, because now the media thinks I'm some kind of homewrecker and this bar is dying quicker than before.
Boone presses a hand to the wall beside my face.
Shut up.
My mouth drops open.
What did you just say to me?
I said, shut up.
How dare you?
Before I can rip him a new one, Boone's lips crashed down on mine.
29. She's fucking gorgeous when she's pissed. The cliche and song lyrics to accompany it flash through my brain before being taken over by everything Ripley. I want her. I want all that rage burning through her underneath me, on top of me, wherever the hell I can get her. Instead of shoving me back like I expect, Ripley curls her fingers into my shirt, digging into my shoulders as her body molds to mine. With a groan, I reach down and grab a handful of her curvy ass before pulling her leg up to wrap around my waist. I grind into her, my cock straining against my jeans, and the friction kicks up the need for her another notch. What is it about this woman? Right now, her brain might hate me, but her body sure doesn't. Ripley releases her grip on my shoulder with one hand to bury her fingers in my hair and tug my head to the other side so she can readjust, taking what she wants from the kiss. I let her take the lead for a few moments before I pull back and meet her hazy gray gaze. You're gonna strip those boots and jeans off, and I'm gonna fuck you on this bar. After I've got you in a better mood, we're gonna figure out how to handle this. The haze burns off her eyes to be replaced by heat. Don't tell me what to do. Shut up. Normally, I wouldn't talk to a woman like that, but Ripley pushes all my buttons. What's more, she gives as good as she gets. I wrap my hands around her waist, pick her up, and carry her to the bar. Her fingers clutch my biceps, holding tight when I sit her where I want her. With a look at her obstinate expression, I have a feeling she's not going to follow my directions too well. You don't want to strip? Fine, I'll do it myself. Who says I even want you? Maybe once was enough. You're full of shit, sugar. With a swift move, I cup her center, feeling the heat even through the denim. I'd bet my favorite bike on the fact that your tight little pussy is wet. She lifts off the scarred wood, pressing into my touch, and her gaze narrows on me. Maybe it's because of someone else. Oh, fuck no. Who? That bartender of yours? Not a chance. Maybe it was Frisco. Irrational jealousy pumps into my blood. I glance down at her nipples, puckered against the low-cut man-in-black tank she wears. Ducking my head, I close my teeth around one and tug. Ripley's sharp inhalation tells me what I need to know. I release it when she arches back. Frisco ain't here. This is all for me. You can lie all you want, Ripley. I'll still give you what you need, even if you won't admit it. Shut up and fuck me. A grin stretches my lips. That's exactly what I plan on doing. I step back, and with two yanks, her boots are on the floor. Ripley lifts her ass and helps me peel the jeans down her legs. Jesus, don't you ever wear panties? The sight of her slick pussy damn near takes me to my knees. Not if I can help it. I sweep my thumb across the wetness, dipping between her bare lips. You're soaked, sugar. You talk too much, superstar. Her words act like lighter fluid, sending my need flaring and my plan to shit. Instead of taking my time, I have to be inside her. Get my cock out. I need to fuck you. For the first time, she doesn't snap back with a defiant answer. Her hands go for the buttons of my jeans, tugging them open, and my cock springs free. When Ripley's hand wraps around it, my groan fills the room. I tangle her fingers with mine to stop her from jacking me off right here. Not coming until I'm inside you. Reaching into my back pocket, I pull out the condom I shoved there earlier tonight and tear it open with my teeth. Before I can put it on, she tugs it from my hands and rolls it down my shaft with another squeeze. I step closer to the bar and fit my cock against her entrance. Look at me, I demand. Ripley's gaze collides with mine. You're gonna watch me fuck you. And when we're done, you try to lie to me and say you didn't love every minute of it.
30. My mouth drops open at Boone's words, and he leans forward to steal another taste from my lips before burying his cock balls deep on the first stroke. I reach out to brace myself on the cool wood, and before I can adjust to the fullness, he pulls back and thrusts again. Fast and then slow, fast and then slow. The changing pace lights my body on fire, and I grab the edge of the bar, white-knuckling it for the ride. As he pounds into me over and over, I hold off my orgasm as long as I can, like I'm proving some kind of point. Oh, God, I gasp as the climax smashes into me. Boone, shit!
Give it to me. I want to hear it.
At his order, the moan I've been keeping in spills from my lips. Fuck yes! Fuck yes! He hammers into me as my body tenses, pleasure rippling through every cell. Finally, Boone's thrusts slow as his cock pulses inside me. His groan is unintelligible. He lowers his forehead against mine as I haul in breath after breath. Pounding starts on the door, and we both jerk our attention to the front of the room. Oh my God. I scoot back on the wood at the same moment Boone pulls out of me. You have to get out of here. Now, go!
I haven't even rolled the condom off my dick, and you're...
I jump down, grab my jeans, and pull them up my legs. Boone ducks behind the bar, I assume disposing of the condom, and I tug on my boots. Go! I motion him toward the back door as he shoves his dick in his pants and buttons them.
Are you crazy? It's the middle of the goddamn night. I'm not letting you open the door to someone by yourself.
Then hide.
No way.
The pounding comes again.
I lost my wallet, a voice yells from outside. Anyone there?
I rush toward the door, but Boone reaches out to snag my arm and pulls me back.
You just hauled in a shitload of cash tonight. Did it ever occur to you that someone could be here to rob you?
I can hear voices. Open up, I just want my wallet.
Stay behind me,
Boone orders. You can't open the door. He'll see you. Boone glares at me.
I'd rather you be safe than worry about some drunk asshole knowing I'm here. Stay behind me.
With a huff, I comply. Boone pulls open the door and a kid in a Vandy t-shirt falls forward.
The fuck do you want?
Boone barks at him. The kid looks up, recognition clear on his face.
Shit, man. This is even better than my wallet.
Before either of us can move, the kid lifts his phone and snaps a picture of Boone and me. Together. With my sex hair. Boone reaches for his phone, but the kid is quicker, bolting toward a car waiting at the curb.
Go, go!
With a squeal of tires, it's gone. Vandy t-shirt. He's the one who sold the video. Boone slams the door shut and turns to me.
We have a serious problem, I tell him.
Boone strides to the back door with the little asshole's wallet in hand. Someone tossed it behind the bar earlier, the cash missing, of course. But at least we have his name and address.
He's going to sell that picture before you can get to him. Guaranteed he already has the contact from selling the video.
Boone pauses at the door.
Which is why I'm going now, instead of staying to fuck you a second time like I'd prefer.
I cross my arms over my chest. That's not happening again. Ever. His expression turns dark.
Because of your damn rule? That's bullshit and you know it.
It wasn't bullshit when the press was accusing me of being a whore like my mama.
I can't do this. I'm not doing this.
My tone is resolute. Boone tilts his head to one side, studying me.
Give me one good reason.
I drop my arms and straighten my shoulders.
I don't have to give you a reason for anything. I'm not going to date you. It's not happening.
Boone pushes off the door and closes the distance until he towers over me. I'm not short at 5'5", but next to his 6-foot-plus frame, I feel tiny.
Who said anything about dating?
My first instinct is to tell him to leave, but something stops me. Maybe the memory of the best orgasms I've had in months.
Then what do you want, a rebound?
He shrugs.
Why not? Who's it gonna hurt?
Me! I'm the one the media says is a slut. Oh, and my bar is going to end up closed in about 3 months if I can't turn it around, notwithstanding all the fines I've racked up.
You let me worry about that shit. I'll get people here, no more than the legal capacity, and my PR team will deal with the media. All you have to do is,
I jut out my chin,
be available to you when and where you want?
I'm joking when I say the words, scoffing at the idea. Boone's smug smile is anything but a joke.
Exactly.
Get out, I snap. Obviously knowing when to retreat, Boone raises his hands in the air and backs away.
Think about it. I'm gonna go track down this little punk. Frisco has my number. You let me know what you decide.
31. I don't know what I'm doing with Ripley, but I want to do more of it. Not a relationship, though, given her answer of a solid hell no with a side of no fucking way. I'm fresh out of a 2-year commitment, and getting into something new is the last thing I should even be thinking about. Doesn't matter. Not happening. I could have debated with Ripley all night, but with that stubborn expression, there was no way I could persuade her that the sky is blue and the grass is green at this point, let alone convince her that my cock needs to find its way into her pussy on a regular basis, regardless of the label we slap on it. There's the upside of the fact that I like being around her, too, at least when she's not bitching me out for something. Shit, even when she's bitching me out, I still like being around her more than most anyone I know. That's the part I should probably be worrying about, but I'm not tonight. No, I've got bigger things on my plate, like the heap of guilt over how our impromptu show ended. How was I supposed to know that someone would report the bar to the fire marshal and shit would rain down? Venue capacity limits aren't exactly something I have to think about beyond knowing that sold out means more money in the bank for me. But getting the fishbowl shut down and Ripley saddled with all those fines? Shit. I'm getting Nick on it. He's already texted me 4 times and left me 3 voicemails tonight that I've ignored, and after what Ripley said about the press, it doesn't take a mental giant to figure out why. Charity hasn't called, which could go either way. Hopefully, it means she's working her PR magic. With the phone on speaker, I call Nick as I turn in the direction of the Vanderbilt campus. According to the ID and the wallet and Google, that kid lives close to it. Nick answers on the first ring, but not with a greeting. What the fuck did you do? You tell me what they're saying I did, and we'll go from there. What part of lay low do you not understand? This is a disaster. I did a show at a bar. Big deal. I don't give a shit about the show. I give a shit about the fact that the media is jumping on the Boone Thrasher is a man whore wagon and accusing you of cheating on Amber. Why would you give her people an opportunity to spin that? All you had to do was be discreet if you couldn't keep your dick in your pants. I make a left onto the correct street and slow down to check out the house numbers. Listen up, Nick. You want to talk to me like I'm a kid you're taking to task, you're going to lose your biggest client. So watch yourself. Your job is to handle shit, so handle it. Could you at least have picked someone who wasn't the daughter of Nashville's most notorious home wrecker? The comment about Ripley's mom pisses me off. Don't fucking talk about her like that. Nick's groan fills the car. You actually like the girl? Jesus Christ, Boone. What did I do to deserve this? Stop whining like a little bitch and do your job. Whatever they're saying about me cheating on Amber is bullshit. I didn't even meet Ripley until after Amber's impromptu wedding, so you can shove the truth down their throats. The other end of the line is silent for a long moment. What do you want me to do, Boone? Have Charity spin this as some sort of love-at-first-sight shit? I choke on the suggestion. How about spinning it as 2 consenting adults doing something that's no one's goddamned business? Nick laughs, but there's no trace of humor in it. We both know that won't work. If we want to get the press to drop this, we have to give them something bigger. Like what? I spot the house number on the license and pull off to park on the side of the street behind a new Camaro. Shit, it's a friggin' frat house. I don't know. I'm working on it, Nick says, and I can hear him clicking on his computer keys. You do your shit. I'm off to go kick some college kid's ass if he's already sold a picture of me and Ripley to the tabloids. Are you fucking kidding me? Nick's voice turns into a yell. Sorry, man. Promised the lady I'd defend her honor. Boone, I hang up on him and silence my phone as he calls back. I shove open the car door and climb out, jamming my phone into my pocket. Why does it have to be a damned frat house? Screw it. I stalk through the front yard and up to the porch. College wasn't something I did. Couldn't have afforded it, even if I'd wanted to. My folks didn't have the money, and I wasn't about to drown myself in debt when all I ever wanted to do was write songs and perform them. These kids would probably shit themselves if they had to sleep in their cars or hustle tips to eat, which is why they'll never understand that hard work pays off in a big way. When I make it to the door, I raise my hand to knock, but it swings open before I make contact and a guy steps out. Whoa, dude, you here for the party? Now that the door is open, I can hear music pulsing from the house, but it sounds like it's coming from the basement. What the fuck kind of party is this? He points to his white shirt covered with what looks like highlighter. Glow party. Basement. Great. So now I'm supposed to find that kid in the middle of some black light rave. The guy who opened the door turns to leave, but I grab him by the arm and pull the ID out of my pocket. Holding it up, I ask, "You know this kid? He down there?" He squints, looking closer before shaking his head. "I don't think he's in there. He showed up late and left with a bunch of girls from Chi Omega. He's banging one of their pledges." "Where did they go?" He shrugs. "I don't know, man. Maybe back to their house?" He tilts his head. "You know, you look like that Boone Thrasher guy." "I get that a lot. Where's the sorority house?" He gives me directions that I hope, considering his fucked up state, are remotely helpful. When I stalk down the sidewalk to my car, he calls out and I pause. "You are that Boone Thrasher guy. I saw the car online." "Holy shit, man." I just shake my head. There's not shit I can do about it now, and with any luck at all, he won't remember me in the morning. I climb in my car and head for the sorority house.
32.
"What is this shit?"
My dad's voice jolts me out of sleep as my door bangs open the next morning. I bolt up in bed, clutching the sheet to my pounding heart. "What?" He shakes the paper in his hand so I can't make anything out of the flapping newsprint.
"I told you that none of those celebrity assholes were setting foot in this bar, and you did it anyway."
Caught off guard, the only argument I can offer is the first one that comes to mind. "Why? What do you care? You never come here. You should be happy money was coming in last night instead of nothing, like a normal Friday night. You're the one who used the bar as collateral, and now I have to find a way to pay off $100,000 that I don't have so we don't lose everything." My dad jerks back.
"Who told you about the loan?"
"The freaking accountant, after he got off the phone with the lenders. I was trying to get a line of credit to keep this place afloat while I figure something out."
"You're going behind my back now? Fucking some guy like your whore mother, and you're trying to get money out of this place when it's not even yours," he yells. "I should have let the bar close years ago."
I'm still smarting from his comment about my mama, but I recover quickly. I have no choice.
"Why didn't you?"
He glares at me.
"I don't owe you an explanation for shit, but this is where it happened. Until I know who put her in the ground, I'm not gonna rest."
Realization strikes with the subtlety of a hit and run. "That's what the loan was for, wasn't it? I give you enough money to drink yourself into the grave, but not enough to pay a private investigator."
"So what if it was? You should want to know, too."
I throw my hands in the air.
"Of course I want to know. She was my mother."
We stare at each other for a full minute before I ask, "What do you think you're going to do when you find out? Get some kind of revenge?"
"You leave that to me."
He tosses the paper onto the bed, and I grab it. It's a tabloid. The front page is a still shot from the video that Vandy kid sold of Boone on stage. Not the one of us together. Beside Boone is a picture of Amber Fleet, her eyes downcast and still looking way too gorgeous. The truth about the breakup, Boone bangs barmaid.
"This is total bullshit."
I scan through the article. It paints me as a homewrecker, drawing comparisons to my mother and Gil Green 20 years ago. The sick feeling that never completely left my stomach last night is back in full force. I glance up to see Pop staring down at me like I'm a stranger, rather than his only child.
"Who gave this to you?"
I don't know why I bother to ask. I already know.
"Brandy, right?"
"I'd be in the dark if she didn't. You don't tell me a goddamn thing."
I meet his gaze, gray like mine but dark and full of fury.
"No, I just keep your bills paid and your beer stocked. You've never asked questions before, so maybe you should quit asking them now."
His eyes narrow and his face twists with rage as his fingers clench by his side. For a second, I wonder if he's going to graduate from backhanding to a closed fist punch. The anger stamped on his features says he'd like nothing more than to hit me, but something holds him back.
Ungrateful little bitch. When's the last time you thanked me for making sure you have a job or a place to live? You want to be jobless and homeless? I can make that happen.
I refuse to cower. Holding the sheet to my chest, I glare at him with years of resentment and disgust.
Do it. I dare you. You'll be out on the street right behind me because no one's going to pay your bills when I stop. Brandy could run this bar.
He sneers, going for the low blow.
In fact, I bet she'd do a better job than you.
I snap back in bed, feeling the force of those words more than I ever felt the back of his hand. Tears of rage burn behind my eyes, but I won't let a single one fall in front of him. I'm done with this shit. Done being his punching bag. Done working myself into the ground without a single shred of gratitude for everything I've sacrificed in the name of family loyalty. It's time for me to stand up for myself for once and prove my backbone hasn't disappeared from my body. It's the only choice I have left.
Then she can start today. I quit.
Pop's face takes on a mottled red shade as wrath and alcoholism collide.
You can't quit because you're fired. I want your shit out of here by noon. Leave the keys on the bar. I'm done with you. You're as dead to me as your whore of a mother.
He turns and stomps out of the room, leaving me sitting up in bed, frozen in place, a lump in my throat choking off my air supply. When the door to the apartment slams and his footsteps thud unevenly down the stairs, I finally move, but only to blink as the tears come, along with gut-wrenching sobs. What did I just do? And what am I going to do now? $447.37. That's how much money I have to my name. My jobless, homeless name. It would have been $347.37, but I remembered the emergency Ben Franklin I folded up in my wallet, what seemed like a million years ago and haven't touched under any circumstances. Now it has been painstakingly flattened and makes up almost a quarter of my life savings. 10 years of hard work, and this is what I have to show for it. When I think of every dollar of my own I used, I shake my head. It's water under the bridge. I can't get any of it back now. The final burn? I didn't even get a chance to pay myself anything from last night's take, which is gone from the safe, even though the stack of citations still sits on the scarred wood surface that has been part of my life for so long. I feed and water Esteban while he preens on his perch, hoping like hell Brandy and Pop will take care of him. Somehow, I can't picture Brandy changing the newspaper at the bottom of his cage on a daily basis. And what about his bird treats? They might be few and far between, but he appreciates them all the same. I ruffle his feathers one last time. If I could take you with me right now, I would. But it's not like I can stuff your cage in my car.
You're fired!
Another tear rolls down my cheek. I'm so sorry, buddy. I'll come back for you. I swear it.
You're fired!
He repeats as I shut the cage door and lock it. If anything happens to that bird, heads will roll. Shoving the back door open with my hip, I cart the last sad load of my stuff out to my car. Looks like it might be you and me for a while, I tell my javelin as I stuff a duffel bag with the rest of my clothes inside. Please don't let me down. I'm not sure I could handle it. The old AMC's engine fires up roughly, but at least it's running. As I drive away from the fishbowl, my chest feels like it's crumpling under the pressure. I failed. Somewhere along the line, keeping the fishbowl open became the same as keeping my mama's memory alive, regardless of how tarnished it was. But I failed. The harsh truth drags another tear from my eye. I drive in the direction of Hope's apartment building, praying that she's there. Honestly, I have nowhere else to go. I'm so stupid. I should have had a backup plan. Never in my wildest imaginings did I ever think I'd be leaving the fishbowl. I've never lived anywhere else. I don't know anything else. The sky opens with a rumble of thunder, and buckets of rain pour down. Isn't this just the cherry on top of a shit sundae? My javelin's wiper blades work only sporadically, and today just isn't my day. Squinting through the windshield, I pull up to a stoplight and look over at the car next to me. It's a minivan. A man is driving, and a little boy presses his face against the window and points at my car. The dad turns and gives me a nod, and then says something to the little boy, who peels his cheek off the glass before the light changes, and they pull forward. Arkansas plates. Probably tourists coming to enjoy the city on a family vacation. I wonder what that would have been like. A family who went places together, spent time together, outside of a bar. I'll never know. It's not in the cards for me. Never has been. I press down on the gas pedal and my car lurches forward, only for the resistance on the pedal to go slack a quarter mile from Hope's place. I coast to the side of the road.
You can't do this to me! Not now!
I slap my hands on the steering wheel before apologizing, like my car truly does have feelings.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to yell. Just a little further.
I look down at the instrument cluster, and the fuel gauge rests on empty. With a sinking feeling in my stomach, I drop my forehead to the steering wheel. This day officially can't get any worse.
33. Did you set out to do the opposite of everything I told you? Because now I've got some college kid's dad calling and threatening to sue for millions for emotional distress because you scared the ever-loving piss out of his son. Nick is on a roll. I've been avoiding his calls, so he finally came out to the house and my security guy let him in. He's on the approved list, for now. If he keeps talking to me like I'm 10, he won't be for long. Still, I can't help but laugh over what happened last night. The kid pissed himself in front of a house full of sorority girls. How is it my fault his dad raised a complete pansy-ass punk who waded into shit deeper than he could swim through? Nick's face turns a deeper shade of red at my chuckle. I swear to God, have you heard the side of the witnesses? Because there were about 15 girls there who will tell you that I didn't raise my voice or touch the kid. Then I signed autographs for half an hour and took pictures with them while he deleted the picture from his phone and removed it from the cloud. I told him I'd come back for a way less pleasant visit if I found out he was full of shit, and the girls all swore he'd never get laid again if he sold it. I paused. Actually, I doubt that kid is getting laid again regardless after pissing himself in front of that group. Those girls are ruthless. What the hell did you give them, money? I shake my head. Nah, I gave them all charity's number. They're getting tickets to whatever show they want. This better not go to court, that's all I can say. Nick grips his forehead with his thumb and index finger, highlighting his receding hairline. Why would it? I didn't do shit. Tell that kid's dad that his son will be in community college if they try anything, because I'll drain him dry for invasion of privacy or some shit. Make it up if you have to. There's gotta be something. You've got my lawyer's number. Deal with it. Nick finally looks at me again, the color of his face returning to normal. Can you please just try to lay low? We've got a media shitstorm that's accusing you of cheating on Amber. Amber's people are calling with their own accusations, and on top of that, I need you at 2 radio stations tomorrow morning to promo that single, which is what we actually need people talking about. I thought there was no such thing as bad publicity. And the single is hauling ass up the charts, so you can't tell me that any of this is killing my numbers, Nick. He looks at the ceiling, probably trying to find some patience, but he's got to know I'm right. This ain't my first rodeo. You're walking a fine line between celebrity and infamy. Watch your step. I'm not even going to pretend to know what that means, but I'll tell you this. Everything the press is saying about me cheating on Amber is bullshit. That's got to be defamation or libel or whatever, because there's not a single lick of truth to it. So why don't you go rattle some cages and see if you can't shut them up? With a sigh, Nick stands. Fine. But you need to stay away from that girl from the bar. There's nothing but trouble there. The fact that Nick thinks he can tell me what to do always pisses me off, and today is no exception. Not happening. You do your job, get Charity busting some ass doing hers, and I'll handle my own shit the way I see fit. He shakes his head, and I follow him to the door. I hope you know what you're doing. Don't I always? Once the door closes behind him, I spend the rest of my day with my guitar, a notebook, and a pencil, putting down more lyrics than I have in months. Ripley is one hell of a muse, and every time I think of her, I catch myself smiling. I finally put away my notebook as the sun goes down and take my phone off silent. I've got 5 missed calls from Nick, but I ignore them. Frisco's call is the only one I return. What's up, man? You might want to Google yourself.
34. I can't tell you how much I appreciate this. Seriously, I owe you, I tell Hope, as I hop up in her pickup truck and we head for the White Horse Saloon. She shoots me a sidelong look from across the cab. You act like I didn't offer you both my futon and a job the last time I saw you. Yeah, but now I'm notorious. Stop it. You're still my best friend. I don't care if you tell me you're a mutant working for the X-Men. The futon and the job are yours. I laugh at her comic book reference before considering another hurdle. Will your boss be pissed that you hired me? My boss doesn't give a shit about anything but the receipts from every night. As long as we're selling booze, he's happy. He doesn't care who's slinging it, as long as they're not skimming off the till. That'll get someone fired in a night. When she mentions employee theft, I finally tell her something I've been keeping to myself for way too long. Brandy's been skimming from the fishbowl during every shift for the last year and a half, maybe longer. Hope stops at a red light, her mouth open in shock. And you didn't fire that skanky bitch? Why not? Pop wouldn't let me. He said I must not have been paying her enough. Are you shitting me? Hope's voice rises an octave. Nope. She shakes her head. Meanwhile, you didn't take a paycheck for weeks at a time. I nod because we both know that's a fact. I think I'm going to be sick. If that little hoe shows up anywhere near me, she'll walk away with 2 black eyes and a broken nose. She's not worth it. Maybe not, but she still deserves it. She's gonna run that bar into the ground. I give it a week or 2, tops. My heart pangs at the thought, but there's nothing I can do now. If she makes it a month, I'll be shocked. Then again, maybe we'll both be wrong, and she'll turn it into some slutty topless place and haul in more money than I ever did. Hope shakes her head. She'd have to get approval for partial nudity, and we both know she's not smart enough to do that. I'm pretty sure she wouldn't bother with approval before she whipped her tits out. Hope laughs, but the sound is rife with bitterness. I really hate that girl. I have my own feelings about Brandy, but I can't say I hate her completely. She's one of the few family members I have left. Enough about her and the fishbowl. Tell me what else I need to know for tonight. Hope launches into an explanation of a few things that I wouldn't have realized offhand, even though I've been running a bar for years. The White Horse is a way bigger, more sophisticated operation, so it doesn't surprise me that they do some things differently. You'll be fine. I'll get you set up with a uniform tank when we get there, and you'll be raking in the tips in no time. I force a smile onto my face. This is my life now. Couch surfing with friends, and everything I own in my car. Go me.
Oh, shit. Did I get you? Didn't mean to spill that. Totally my fault,
the man says, his words slurring. With a sleeve of plastic cups in each hand that I'd just retrieved from the stockroom, I look down at my white tank top with the White Horse Saloon logo on the front. It's soaked through with what smells like someone's gin and tonic, and now my headlights are on high beams from the unexpected dousing of a cold drink. At times like this, I wish I wore padded bras. Yay, flashing my nipples the first night on the job. Employee of the month material right here. With gritted teeth, I smile at the clearly intoxicated stranger who has a dumb grin on his face.
No worries. Have a good night, sir.
Skirting around him, I head toward Hope to hand off the cups and ask her if I can get another tank top.
Ripley, is that you?
I look up and almost run into Law, my ex who lasted longer than any of the others. Jeez, just when I think this day can't get any worse. My cheeks hurt from all the fake smiles I've plastered on my face today, and the one stretching my lips now is just as phony as all the others. Lawrence Diller was still a law student when we broke up 2 years ago, after he kept accusing me of choosing the fishbowl over him. At that point, I was working 6 nights a week, and our schedules never seemed to mesh when it was convenient for either of us. Also, he didn't particularly like bars, which is probably why I haven't seen him since. So, why now? "Hey, Law," I drawl. "What are you doing here? This isn't really your scene." He's wearing a pressed collared shirt, still tucked into dress pants, with an expensive-looking watch wrapped around his wrist.
"Just passed the bar exam, so we're out to celebrate."
He waves at a group of 5 guys behind him.
"Some of the other associates are from out of town, so we figured we'd bar hop down Broadway tonight. You work here now?"
He stares pointedly at my protruding nipples, and presumably the logo on my shirt. Another fake-as-shit smile on my face, I answer with an upbeat tone. "Yep, decided on a change of scenery."
"I thought you'd never leave the fishbowl and your old man, no matter how bad they drag you down with them."
His astute observation stabs me through the heart. "Well, things change," I say through clenched teeth.
"New girl, I need those cups,"
Hope's assistant manager Brian yells from the pass-through, saving me from this awkward conversation.
"I gotta go. Have a good time. Congrats."
I turn to head his way, but Law catches me around the waist in an overly familiar gesture that would have been fine when we were dating, but now I stiffen.
"We should talk. Things are going really great for me. They started me at 150 grand a year, and I've got a sweet condo downtown. I broke up with the girl I was dating for a couple months because she wanted her MRS more than a law degree at graduation. And damn, Rip, I miss you. I shouldn't have walked away."
All his declarations hit below the belt. It's a struggle to keep the smile intact, but I manage somehow. "I'm glad things are going well for you, but I really gotta get back to work. Maybe we can talk later," I say in a cheerful tone that's total crap. My suggestion is completely insincere, but I hope he doesn't realize that. "Enjoy tonight." When Law releases me, I hurry behind the bar. Hope's eyes are huge, and she takes the cups and tosses them to Brian.
"Was that Law? What happened to your shirt? What did he want?"
"Yes, and some asshole spilled on me. I don't know what he wants." Hope raises an eyebrow as she glances over my shoulder.
"He wants one thing, girl, and that's you. His eyes are glued to your ass."
I roll my eyes. Of course they are. Law loved my ass. The sex hadn't been off the charts amazing, unlike with someone else whose name I refused to mention, but it hadn't been bad either. Just average, I guess.
"Can I beg you for another tank? I'll pay for it out of my tips."
Hope scoffs.
"You get 5. I'll get you one if you want to run down to the basement and grab another keg. It's going to get your shirt filthy anyway. I made Brian bring up the last 3, and he's apparently on his period now and told me it's someone else's turn."
She shoots a sharp glance toward the assistant manager.
"No problem. Where am I going?"
She gives me directions, along with the key to the storage room, and I make my way through the crowd again toward the stairs. I've been hauling kegs for as long as I've been able to lift them, so it's not a big request. But of course, because today can't get any shittier, Law follows me down into the basement.
"Rip, babe. I mean it. I want to talk. You're the one that got away, and now that my life is everything I've always wanted, I need someone to share it with. You wouldn't even have to work in a bar. You could go to school if you want."
I pinch the bridge of my nose, searching for patience somewhere deep inside, and come up empty.
"I can't have this conversation right now. You should go back to your friends."
"Promise you'll call me tomorrow, and I'll leave you alone tonight."
"Sure, fine."
I'm lying, but he could never read me well enough to know that. Hoping this conversation is well and truly over, I turn toward the door marked private, employees only, but Law lays a hand on my shoulder and spins me back around before his lips slam down on mine. Completely stunned by the fact that he's pulling some kind of alpha move, it takes me a few seconds before I push him away.
"Whoa! Hey, what the hell?"
I can taste the alcohol he's been drinking, which explains his sudden display of masculinity.
"Needed to give you something to think about."
"Got it.
thinking. Go back to your friends, Law.
With a self-satisfied smile, he gives me a jerk of his chin before he trudges up the stairs. I wait until he's halfway up and shoots me a backward glance before I unlock the storage room and slip inside. I slump against the door and stare up at the ceiling. Seriously? Tonight, of all nights? Law's words echo in my head like a slap. You wouldn't even have to work in a bar. You could go to school if you want. Me working as a bartender is still not up to his standards, obviously. And if I were considering going back to him for even a second, that would ensure a big fat nope of a response from me. This is who I am. If that's not good enough for anyone, they can go fuck themselves. With a grunt of frustration, I lift the keg Hope asked for off the floor and maneuver the door open with my elbow, then hip-check it shut before setting the keg on the floor and making sure the door locks behind me. The stairs look even steeper now that I have a keg to lug up them, but tonight, I'm all about proving I can do whatever I put my mind to, even if it's as simple as moving something from point A to point B. I have worth. I have something to offer, I remind myself, even though I feel like a bottom feeder right now. As I get to the top of the stairs, Law is waiting near the end of the bar with his friends. When he sees me, he charges toward me.
Hey, let me help with that, babe.
He reaches out to snatch the keg from my arms. The sudden loss of the weight throws me off balance, and I stumble backward, right down the stairs. I'm too stunned to tuck and roll. No, I just flop and tumble, my arms and legs flailing until I crash to a stop at the bottom, jamming my legs against the floor. Oh, my God. I just fell down a flight of stairs. I could have died. But I didn't. I'm okay. Maybe I don't have the world's worst luck.
Oh, God, Ripley, are you okay?
It's Law, already on his way down the stairs as I stumble to my feet, my head swimming. I'm fine, it's okay. I take one dizzy step forward, but when my ankle rolls and pain shoots up my leg, my stomach drops. I instantly take the weight off my leg as tears spring to my eyes. No. No, no, this can't happen. Law rushes toward me, skidding to a stop.
Shit, are you okay?
He pats me down for injuries, not noticing that I'm holding the railing to avoid putting my weight on both feet. I grit my teeth. Fine, totally fine.
Are you sure? That was a hell of a fall.
I look up the stairs to see if anyone else noticed, but no one else is rushing to the rescue. I'm fine. I gotta get that keg to Brian and get back to work. He reaches out a hand.
Let me help you up the stairs. Seriously, that looked really bad. You're lucky you didn't hurt yourself.
I bite down on my lip to stop myself from groaning as I take the first step up the stairs. Law is too busy talking about how bad my fall looked to realize that I'm seconds from crying. Breathing through the pain, I hobble my way up and stop next to the keg at the top. Sweat beading on my forehead from the effort.
You sure you don't need help?
Positive. I gotta get back to work. Without waiting for him to respond, I heft the keg into my arms again, screaming inwardly as a shaft of pain stabs at my ankle. I thought I was lucky? Not a chance. I manage to get the keg behind the bar and swap it out. Brian gives me a nod of approval, which helps restore a bit of my pride but doesn't do a thing to help my ankle. Hope returns and tosses another tank to me, and I catch it in midair. Go change. I'll cover you for a few. Rudy is coming in, too. It's almost 10, so this place is going to be hopping in a bit. The bar is already packed, so I can only imagine how crazy it's going to get. I take the new uniform shirt and slowly make my way to the break room and employee bathrooms, hoping no one notices that I'm hobbling like an old lady. If it's broken, I'm screwed. To work behind a bar like this one, you have to be on your toes,